We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
This necklace, the reason all of my dates been blind dates. But today, I got my Ferrowitz girl with me. I'm mashing the gas, she's grabbing the wheel. It's trippy how hard she rides with me. The new Bobby and Whitney, only time we don't speak is during Sex in the City. She gets carry fever, but soon as the show's over, she's right back to being my soldier. Cause mommy's a rider, and I'm a roller. Put us together, how they gon' stop both us? Whatever she lacks, I'm right over her shoulder. When I'm off track, mommy is keeping me focused. So let's lock this down like it's supposed to be. The O3, Bonnie and Clyde, Hov and B. Holla, all I need in this life is sin. It's me and my girlfriend. Me and
New York
girlfriend.
City, come on.
Time to ride to the very end. It's me and my boyfriend.
New York City, come on.
All I need in this life is sin. It's me and my girlfriend.
New York City, come on.
Time to ride to the very end.
Hey, yo, Jay, let me hear the second verse.
The problem is, dudes treat the one that you loving with the same respect that you treat the one that you humping. That ain't about nothing. If ever you mad about something, it won't be that. Oh no, it won't be that. I don't be at places where we comfy at with no biatch. Oh no, you won't see that. And no, I ain't perfect. Nobody walking this earth's surfaces. But girlfriend, work with the kid. I keep you working at Hermes Birkin bag. Manolo Blahnik Tim's, aviator lens, 600 drops, Mercedes Benz. The only time you wear a bird Barry to swim,
okay.
And I don't have to worry, only worry is him,
okay.
She do anything necessary for him, and I do anything necessary for her, so don't let the necessary occur,
yep.
All I need in this life is sin, it's me and my girlfriend, me
New York
girlfriend.
City, come on.
Time to ride to the very end, it's me and my boyfriend,
New York City, come on.
All I need in this life is sin, it's me and my girlfriend,
look, New York City, come on.
Talk to me.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Snacky Tunes on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm one half your host, Tay Diabolik, a finger on the pulse, sliding into the cat-torn seat. Is DJ Never Forget? How are you?
I'm good.
What was that track? That's an old one.
That's an old one.
Throwback!
I got that track when I was a college MD at the University of Oregon, and it's from the motherfucking Rub remix compilation, and I wrote someone from there, from you guys, and we got DJ Ayers in the studio today.
Hi.
And we also have
and that track was on that compilation, and I've played it out many a times to many happy people over the years.
Yeah, it's a very snacky kind of barbecue jumping off in the afternoon.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. Also when 90s like nights were hot for about 6 months. That was always a nice, drop that in there.
At the UNATY, the Flax and JD night over at Hugs.
That always went over well.
But we got a packed show today. Coming up in our second part, we have Daniel Bowman Simon of People's Garden NYC. He's going to be, he's in studio. Hey, man.
How are you?
He's going to be talking about the farm initiative at the White House and also trying to get a public farm in front of the mayor's office here in New York.
And Ayers is not just here just to so I could talk about how I used to listen to him on my radio show.
Oh, no, Ayers is going to be talking about
upcoming projects
and dropping some music and upcoming parties.
That's right. But we're going to do all that.
Yeah. But first,
we had a very big weekend. Big shout out to all the Dance Right people, Holy Ghost, Jessica Six, and Classics. We got to do a big party as Punches out at the Dim Sum restaurant, 88 East Broadway. But before the weekend even started, we were lucky enough to be invited to the Frankie Spontino cookbook release party. And if you've never been to a cookbook release party, it is an awesome event. Great chefs, great food.
I think it's because it's a Frankie Spatino's event that it was awesome, and they happened to be putting a book out.
Yes, but you know, we met a lot of great people there, and one of them was Ingrid Abramovich, who is actually the book's editor. And we have Ingrid with us on the phone today. Ingrid, how are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Thanks again for joining us today.
Sure, great to be here.
So congratulations on the book. Everyone who has read it and been able to even leaf through it has said it is different than any other type of cookbook. And I know that you have a little bit of a different type of background because you come from more of like a design magazine background. So how did you get involved with the Franks, and how did your design aesthetic help turn this cookbook into something different?
This was the first cookbook I've ever edited or acquired, and so I think I had no preconceptions of what a cookbook had to be or should be. I was an editor, a magazine editor for a long time. The last job I had was at House and Garden magazine, which closed. And in the meantime, I live in Carroll Gardens, right near the Frankie's restaurant. So I was eating at the restaurant from day one, and always loved it. And after House and Garden closed, I got a job at Artisan Books as a book editor and started doing decorating books. But Artisan is pretty famous for cookbooks, and I was looking around for a cookbook that I could do. I thought it would be fun. I always loved to cook as well. And approached the Franks because, to me, that was the menu that I really wanted to learn to cook at home. It was even, you know, as a resident of the neighborhood, it was getting harder and harder to get into the restaurant. And I thought, you know, think of how I could just make this food at home. It's very simple. And when I approached them, they had what impressed me was that they had a very strong vision, not just for how the book should read or what the recipe should be, but also they wanted to create a book that didn't look like every other cookbook or every other book out there. They really had an original concept for the design of the book. And as you said, as someone with a design background, that also spoke to me. And the design, they have a part owner in the restaurant who is also a manager of their restaurants, Travis Kaufman, who has a design background. And he was the one who wanted to design the book himself and make it look like he had this 19th century tool catalog that he found in a used bookstore. And that was his vision for the book, sort of faux leather cover, gilded edges, gold embossing, really like a 19th century book.
It's interesting, you know, you mentioned the word simple. We interviewed a lot of people at the event on Thursday, and that is a word that continues to come up, simple in the best way possible. I started reading the book this weekend, and, you know, their tomato sauce has 5 ingredients. You know, other things are very few steps, and I want to know, like, as an editor, how you were able to, you know, convey their simpleness in a way that it was a really good thing and not just, you know, keeping some hidden kitchen secrets.
Right, because there's so many Italian cookbooks, and I was trying to, you know, in selling it to everyone, I was trying to explain why the Franks are so genius in what they're doing. The Franks are trained chefs. They both worked in some of the these 5-star restaurants in France. One of them worked for the most famous chef in the world, Paul Bocuse. They really, even though they might not seem like snooty chefs the way you think of snooty chefs, they actually really have the technique and a lot of experience. So when they do simple, they design their restaurant. You know, when they first opened Frankie's, they had this tiny galley kitchen. Everything had to be prepared out in the open,
right?
You know, with almost no space
and induction burners, things like that.
Yeah, they didn't, and they also didn't want to have overhead vents because they thought it would be too noisy in that tiny space. So to do that, I mean, to get their license, they had to come up with an alternative. So they designed the whole menu to be cooked on induction burners, which don't create any smoke. But basically, the recipes had to be, for that reason, had to be super simple to be, you know, just for efficiency. But whenever, you know, but their recipes, like you said, the tomato sauce has five ingredients, but it's the way they put it together and little touches, which are also included in the book. The fact that unusual for Italian chefs, they use white pepper. A lot of people talk about that. In fact, somebody told me they just went to Fairway, which is a big supermarket in Brooklyn, and they're sold out of white pepper, and they were blaming right. the book for that. But those little touches really make the difference, even if the food is simple.
Right. Now, in editing this book, there was an obvious different approach when you just even leaf through it. It goes beyond just recipes, but they have a whole section on this thing called like the Sunday sauce, where it shows how to put together a Sunday meal for your family, or things in the back like how to fillet a sardine, or what's in season. As the book's editor, how did you go about putting the book together and picking out of all the things they bring to the restaurant what makes it in?
Well, I mean, part of this Travis Kaufman, who designed the book, is very into this Japanese concept of wabi-sabi, which is, you know, having sort of like happy accidents and a little spontaneity, you know, creating something, you know, using that when you're creating, that not everything has to be perfect and by the book. So I think deliberately, the book is a little bit loose. We have an appendix that has all kinds of crazy things in it, from cooking with kids, because one of the Franks is a dad, to how to grow an avocado tree out of a pit, because the Franks and everyone around them all realized one day that they've all tried to do that at some point in their life. And so I think I was very open as an editor to having a certain looseness. You know, it didn't have to just be appetizers, main courses, desserts. The Franks don't cook chicken at the Spontino. Well, that was kind of strange. You know, what cookbook doesn't have chicken in it? But they didn't want any chicken recipes. They don't cook chicken. So, okay, there's no chicken in the book. But, you know, I think the thing the thread that ties it all together is that I think that the book has a very strong narrative, that people are realizing that people cook from cookbooks, but a lot of people, you know, are so into food these days that they stay up at night reading them like novels. And the narrative thread is really what everything else hangs on.
And I think one of the things that's actually been a mistake of this whole interview is that it's actually not even the word cookbook appears in the title. It's a companion and cooking manual, and everything that the Franks say, that it's, you know, as nice as it looks, you're supposed to have it in the kitchen to get dirty and to be used. And what was, you know, what was the intention of calling it, you know, a companion cooking manual and not just straightforward cookbook?
Well, part of it is a little bit of jokey, you know, like, mm-hmm. But the other part is dead serious. They really want this book to be the book that's on your counter, and it's a nice size. It's not too big, so it wouldn't take up that much room on your counter. But more than that, it has a lot of. It's really aimed at people who are learning how to cook, to more experienced cooks who just want good recipes and some new tricks. But if you're someone who's just starting out and learning how to cook, there's a whole section on what kind of gear you need in your kitchen. And not like extra stuff that you don't need, gadgets you don't need, but really the basics according to the Franks, which isn't going to be the same advice that you read, you know, in Martha Stewart. You know, it's no bullshit. And the pantry section also, their favorite ingredients, what kind of tomatoes. Again, for a restaurant that is not, by New York standards, an expensive restaurant, they're always trying to keep costs down. So that also makes the book really useful for people who are trying to cook on a budget, create, you know, wonderful gourmet food, but without expensive ingredients. So there's a lot of advice like that layered into the book as well.
Awesome. Well, Ingrid, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. If I want to get a copy of this book, where could I get one?
It's available pretty much everywhere, on Amazon. Barnes & Noble has it. All the big chains have it. And a lot of the indie stores all over the country have it. So you should be able to find it in your independent bookstore.
Awesome. Well, Ingrid, thank you so much. Thank you for giving us some insight behind the scenes of putting together what will probably be one of the cookbooks or cooking manuals of the summer, if not the year.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
All right. You're listening to Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.com. Big, big shout out to Brooklyn Bowl, dubbed by Rolling Stones as one of the greatest places on earth. They have great food by Blue Ribbon, live music, and of course, bowling. It's eco-friendly. They've had every act there from Snoop Dogg to Dr. Dog, The Roots to Gaslight Anthems, Gogo Bordello, and Disco Biscuits. It's all they got great local hip-hop and rock and roll. It's located at 61 Wythe Avenue, Williamsburg. It's off the L and the G. We've done a ton of great events there, and we spent many a great nights bowling and eating and drinking, and their margaritas are quite deadly. Coming up next, after a short little music interlude, we have Daniel Bowman Simon from People Gardens NYC, and in the second half of our show, we have DJ Ayers from The Rub. You're listening to Snacky Tunes, DJ Never Forget. Here we go. Listening to Snacky Tunes on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. DJ and I Forget was just dropping a track whose name I've already forgotten.
It's Ten Snake? I don't know if I'm saying that right. Coma Cat.
I love it.
I love that sort of like island vibey.
It sounds
xylophone.
We heard it out on Saturday night, and I thought it was like a Luther Vandross re-edit or something like that, and I was totally wrong. But it could be. Anyway, so we are lucky to be joined in studio by Daniel Bowman Simon of People's Garden NYC. Daniel, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. We met at Kathy Irway's / 6 Point Ales potluck yesterday, and you were telling us about how you work with public garden initiatives. And if you give us a little background on that.
Sure. So right now I've got a campaign going called People's Garden NYC, which people can sign on at peoplesgardennyc.org. It is a sort of giving a positive vision to the mayor about what he can do, what he can let us do, including school children. Let's start a vegetable garden in front of City Hall, and let's have that garden be a place that people can learn about food, learn some hands-on science, and do a public service, because this food could go to food pantries. We have over a million people in this city that don't have enough money to buy food, and generally they're not getting fresh food when they go to those food pantries, and why not share that love and spread it and make use of a space that really isn't being used for anything. We're not taking away. We're just adding to the beauty of this city.
Right. We've talked about this before, where it's not just donating food. It's kind of donating the right food, where it's like you donate canned goods that have a lot of preservatives, and it's not exactly a healthy diet, but it's taking, you know, leftover greens and you know, carrots and whatever, and giving people access to healthy, clean, good food.
Sure. And you could see that sometimes, you know, you go to a party and the flyer will say, you know, get $5 off if you bring a can. And it's usually just like the nastiest thing that people
like
still have left
greens,
in their pantry. And if you think about it, though, from people's perspective who don't have what you have, if you were in their shoes, you'd probably want healthy food, fresh food. And so why not start a movement that can really do that? And it can even go beyond that. It can be a project. I don't think in front of City Hall they have the appetite for it now, but in the 1890s in Brooklyn, there was this movement called the vacant lot cultivation. And when people were out of work, they were connected to vacant lots where they could garden. And the Brooklyn Railroad, this is over 100 years ago, I was doing some research and found out the Brooklyn Railroad used to let these vacant lot cultivators ride the railroad for free so that they could get from their home to their plot without spending money. And that just, I mean, there's a certain dignity in being able to take care of yourself.
Right.
And food is fundamental in that.
Detroit actually has that right now. We had My Brightest Diamond on Dinner with the Band. She told us a lot about how all these abandoned houses and abandoned vacant lots are actually now being turned into urban farming areas because no one else wants them and the land is good enough to grow on.
Yeah, and it's compelling. I was giving a talk and just mentioned this in passing, and there was a guy from a food pantry in Borough Park called Masbia, and he called me up afterwards, and he's like, yo, I actually know of a parking lot that people don't even park in really anymore. He said, if you can connect me with people who know how to grow food, we can start a vacant lot right there, and we can use that food in our food pantry. So
amazing.
These things, you know, I was there to talk about a vegetable garden at City Hall, and the conversation, just like it did now, kind of goes off on another tangent.
Right.
Now, you were also an advocate for the farm at the White House, and which really, you know, with Michelle Obama's initiative, have really put farms and fresh food
and obesity issues.
And obesity is really on the table in a way that hasn't been brought up, especially not in the last 8 years. With Bush's presidency. What was your involvement with working with the White House and getting fresh food and these type of issues as part of the national agenda?
So back two years ago during a presidential campaign, I got this idea that we really needed a president who would lead by good example. This was actually an idea that I heard Alice Waters talk about at a dinner, and she mentioned it, and I thought, all right, it's great that Alice is putting it out there, but let's show that there's like actually a galvanized grassroots movement around the country that is basically saying, you know, whoever moves into the White House, be it McCain or Obama, like, we got your back. If you grow food there and do it properly, involve kids, make sure that the food is not just feeding the people who live in the White House, but some food pantries. Similar model to what's going on at, what is hoped to happen at City Hall. If you can do that, America has got your back. And so it became something that wasn't just something Michelle Obama might want to do, but one of those things that she knew America was waiting for and watching. And so we kind of enabled, empowered her to say, you know what, 2 months after moving in, first spring, we're going to start a garden there. And it's really transformed the way that she thinks about food. And by extension, it's allowed a lot more African Americans who have previously considered kind of growing food to be sort of remind them of slavery. I've heard that there's a lot more African Americans who are like becoming a lot more comfortable in the past year and growing food and kids getting excited, and chefs too. I mean, chefs absolutely love that there is a garden growing at the White House, because who doesn't love cooking with ingredients that taste good, that look good, and so on,
and that are fresh? And I know another great example of this is San Francisco, who has always probably been one of the foremost green farm-to-table type of cities. And they had, I don't know if it's permanent yet, but didn't they had a setup in front of their city hall of some sort of farm. And is it in the process of becoming permanent? And are you involved with that at all?
I did have the opportunity to give a little speech there while we were campaigning for the garden at the White House back in 2008. There was a victory garden. It was part of Slow Food Nation, and that food too, it was beautiful. It was a way to get the idea of food really into the mayor's consciousness. Mayor Gavin Newsom is now taking on some pretty incredible food initiatives out there. I think that there was there unfortunately is a big homeless population right in that neighborhood, and I think that they were having some trouble with urination in the nighttime sort of thing, and so they're working on that. I'm not personally involved, but there are definitely people who want to make that permanent.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us, and I got one final question for you. What is your favorite thing to eat right off the vine or right out of the ground?
Brussels sprouts.
And just raw, cook them up, or just...
Yeah, and there's an awesome Brussels sprout recipe in that Kitchen Companion thing that I'm going to try later on tonight.
Fantastic.
And if I can get some. They're not quite in season yet, but...
And if people want to get involved, I know that you have a petition to get in front of Mayor Bloomberg. What's the website and what's the email to sign up for the petition?
You just go to peoplesgardennyc.org, and if you want to help gather signatures even more, you can print out a PDF. It's a great way to talk to people, whether it's on the subway or at a concert. You know, just ask them to sign the petition, and it'll allow you to talk about gardens in ways you never imagined.
All right, well, we'll leave one here at the network for people to sign, and when it's filled up, we'll send it over to you.
Thanks.
Daniel, thank you so much for coming by.
My pleasure.
Hopefully we'll get a garden in front of New York. You know, it only makes the city look more beautiful. Thanks again to listening to Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network. .com. Thanks again to Brooklyn Bowl for being an awesome sponsor, Jack Insing and Rec Tech, our producer and engineer, and Roberta's for feeding us this delicious food. We got a new track that Punch has just put out, a remix of Jackie Wilson's I Want to Take You Higher and Higher, came out today. And then when we come back, The Rub and Flashing Lights, DJ Ears. That sounds like a summer heater for all you Filter House and Soul fans and anybody who likes just good old time barbecue music. That's the I Want to Take You Higher and Higher, Jackie Wilson Punches,
which you can download for free at FOTPNYC.com. Also, just before we get to DJ Airs, this Wednesday is the second edition of our barbecue blowout. Kathy Airway, who has a show in here and also runs Not Eating Out in New York, will be will be our guest chef, and then Freelance Wales, who were on this show a while back, will be DJing. If you want to check out the Freelance Wales episode, go to our podcast on iTunes. Just search Snacky Tunes, and you can hear them. They actually played five songs live in here. We cleared out everything, and it was really amazing. So I would love to introduce our guest today. It was like I said before, I got his CD when I was at the University of Oregon, music director, some other fucking rub, remix, sampler, compilation.
So that was what, like seven years ago?
6-7 years ago. And I wrote somebody. I don't know who wrote me back.
It was probably me.
Probably you. And I was like, I like this. And you're like, thanks for playing it. And I was like, cool. New York people write people back. Who knew? For any of you who've been out in the nightlife world, being relevant and staying on point for that many years like you have with your crew is impressive, to say the least. You have The Rub, you have TNA Records, and you have the one of my new favorite parties, Flashing Lights, with Jubilee, who's Thank been you. On here and catched up. So welcome, DJ Ayers, to the show.
Thank you.
We used to have sound effects, and right now it'd be like a bwah, 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 or like a crowd cheer.
Or a bowling, like...
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
So why don't you talk to us about you know, the evolution of your DJing and being involved in the nightlife for New York so long. And, I mean, having lines around the block for The Rub every time you do one.
Yeah, so I started out DJing because I was buying a bunch of really I wouldn't say obscure, but like underground limited edition 12 inches in the 90s, you know, from Fat Beats and Babito's Footworks, and you know, it went from that to me having a college radio show, and then people asking me to DJ at parties, and that was in 96. So when I got to New York, I just started playing in you know, bars, restaurants, like what, really wherever I could, and I could maybe bring 20 or 30 people. That was 12 years ago, and wow. So, about 4 or 5 years into being here, we got an opportunity to DJ at a brand new bar that was opening up called Southpaw. One of the owners was this guy Mikey, still is this guy Mikey Palms, who ran the distribution for the Brooklyn Brewery, and we would do these parties on Saturday afternoons with families and picnic tables, and people would drink beer and tour the Brooklyn Brewery. And, you know, he would tell me, hey, so I'm going to open up a bar in a 99-cent store. And like, oh, okay, that sounds cool. Call me up when you do that, you know, right. In Park Slope. And then on Fifth Avenue in Park Slope, it wasn't gentrified, and it right. looks entirely different now than it did then. You know, now it's all like sushi restaurants and
right. Little cute boutiques and things,
yeah,
like
exactly.
that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, then it was just bodegas and bagel-teak and, you know, like
right.
Tire-fixing shop. So at any rate, you know, we went down there to check it out when it was open, and it wasn't a bar. It was a huge, like, really nice stage venue with yeah, great sound system. Yeah,
I mean, Southpaw is great.
Yeah, yeah. And I did my first birthday party there, and or I did my birthday party there, rather. In 2002, and that was the first Rub.
Right.
And, you know, they were interested in doing like a weekly, but we said, you know, let's do a monthly because maybe we can get a little more longevity out of it. And it turns out that worked.
I would say that you have had some longevity, and it still goes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we don't have to do a whole lot. It really, we don't promote it very much, and we kind of have a lot of opportunities that have come up because of doing the Rub. But it's like for 4 years, probably, we haven't had to put anything really back into the party itself. You right. know, people just know, show up at Southpaw.
Show up early at Southpaw.
Yeah, exactly.
Really,
yeah,
show up really early. I mean, you know, where we go, we're just like, it's a commitment. You're just going to go, and you're going to go early. Because if you try and pull that, like, oh, I'm just going to roll up, you're going to spend a majority of your night waiting in that line.
Yeah, yeah. We, like, probably 4 or 5 years ago, we could have moved it to a bigger venue. You know, I mean, I definitely think that at that point, we could have been doing 800 people a month. Southpaw fits, you know, more like 450 upstairs, right, and maybe 100 downstairs. But, you know, we just thought, we've got a really good thing going here. Why mess with it? You know, because you see all these parties where they keep moving bigger and bigger and bigger, and then when it starts to cool off or something happens with the venue or, right, you know, whatever happens and whatever inevitably happens, when you start to make your descent back down and get smaller, everybody loses interest. So we thought, like, let's keep it at this place, which is a pretty big club, but not huge mega club.
It's a great size.
And make people want to come.
Right.
You know?
So you can take some place like that, and then you go in the kind of opposite direction for Flashing Lights, which is in a dim sum restaurant.
Yeah.
Which is a totally different vibe, which I personally love. We all, you know, we DJed there on Saturday, and, you know, but the first introduction really was Flashing Lights, and it was like, mm-hmm, this is upstairs on the second floor of a mall.
Yeah.
You know, how did the Flashing Lights party come about? I mean, most people only have one successful party here, and you now have established two.
Yeah. Well, the Flashing Lights was Jess Jubilee and Nick Ketchdubs and I, you know, are all friends. And at the Rub, I don't get to play electronic music very much at all. It's really mostly hip hop, funk, soul, reggae, you know, kind of groovier music and more African American music. And so, you know, we said, well, we need to do a party where we can play all the rave stuff that we like. And house and techno and disco and all that stuff too. And so we started at Public Assembly when it changed over ownership. And, you know, we were doing it weekly and that was cool, but we really wanted it to be like pretty weird and crazy. And we bounced around a little bit and then we finally ended up at 88 Palace. And that's been really fun because people, you know, you go up the stairs into 88 Palace and turn the corner.
Right.
You don't know what you're going to see at all. You don't know what to expect. And then, you know, there's 500 people there with glow sticks drinking
rave punch,
rave juice out, yeah, of a Ziploc bag with a glow stick in it.
It's awesome. I mean, it really is. And you always have great guests. And what I like about your party is that the three residents are amazing DJs, and you would be happy to see them regardless. And then your guests range from really big to maybe a little bit lesser known or even unknown, and it's always consistent. So it's nice to know you have a great party with good DJs no matter what.
I've always loved going there. It makes it feel like what old New York used to be like when you read about all these sort of underground parties in non-traditional spaces. When I go there, it's that same thing of just being like, oh, this is part of like this underground thing. We're in a dim sum restaurant in Chinatown listening to music that we all love. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, Mean Red and Good People should really get the credit for that. They're sort of constantly scouting weird alternative spaces. And they did Brooklyn Yard, you know, up until it was done a few weeks ago.
Heartbreak.
I have no doubt that they're going to continue to find like really awesome weird warehouses and cool spots for us to do parties.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get you playing your set. We'll come back. We'll talk about TNA Records and upcoming parties and
great
things like that. So we'll do a little talk over. We walk over there and set up. You're listening to Snacky Tunes. We are your host, Finger on the Pulse. Once again, this Wednesday at Good Company, which is 10 Hope Street, aka former Hope Lounge. We'll be doing our second barbecue blowout with our fantastic partners, New York Magazine and Incase. And Kathy Irway will be, I believe she's going to be making kimchi hot dogs from scratch, which sounds delicious. And as always, free entry, $5 a plate. And it's early, it starts at 7, so you can still go out and, you know, if you can move from the food. The last one with Roberta's seriously had the spiciest chicken that I've ever had in my entire life. So I am excited for it. Shout out again to Brooklyn Bowl for being our sponsors today. And Ayers, you good over there?
Yeah.
And we are going to get a live set from DJ Ayers right now. Another
She'll be out for the night soon as I had to hit the pillow sweet. Wake her up about 30 minutes later, calling me the Terminator. Let's go again. Red zone, I'ma get a first down. Call me Luda Drew Brees, I throw it in. Touchdown, he scores. Ludacris the MVP. With a rack like that and a back like that, CC better CC me. Cause them legs just keep on going. So I got up, put it up, babe. Let the 808 thump and the beat go bump. Cause she ride it like a thoroughbred.
That was awesome. You were listening to Snacky Tunes. That is DJ Ayers coming back from the decks. Really great, fantastic mini set.
Why, thank you.
Love that CR track.
Love that CR track and that video.
Yeah, the video is undeniable.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like the video makes the song. I don't know.
I mean, it's a really
also
good
the bass line.
Yeah, and the bass line. And the like the horse whip sounds.
I don't think that song is getting as much play as it should.
Yeah, I don't know why either. I don't understand.
Because Ludacris, first off, Ludacris is back. No denying that. And he's got a good little verse on there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, she's no Justin Bieber, though, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess when 92.3 or 97.1 only plays 20 songs at all, it's tough to, like, even break in.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't know. I think it's really hard when you get to the level of somebody like a Ciara, because it takes so much for, it, you know, if you're even gone for a year now, like, that seems like a lifetime in these careers. And so, you know, think about how big, like, A-Marie was. A-Marie had 3 or 4 incredible singles off of her last album that nobody played, and it just disappeared. There's so much terrific pop music, you know, that you can play at nightclubs and that people love. And you know, like I almost want to keep that music for myself. You know, it's like you have these secret weapons.
Yeah, I mean it's wonderful. And seriously, go to YouTube and look for Ciara Ride video if you haven't seen it. It goes to show what like a good dance coach, and like, I mean, that video couldn't have cost them more than like $10,000.
Yeah, and actually, it kind of goes against everything we've been talking about, because looking at her, you can tell there was like hormones in the meat and in the milk that she was brought up on.
Right. So speaking of record labels, you also have a record label with Titsworth called TNA Records.
Yes.
And what have you guys put out, or what do you have coming out?
The first couple of years, we were really focused on Baltimore Club, and so it was like bootleggy, fun, like chopped up club tunes. And for about the last year or so, and then moving forward, we're doing more with original production. So there's still some samples in there, but we've really like got a much more wider variety of music. For example, like coming up, we've got another thing by this guy Steve Starks from Washington D.C., who does a party there called Nouveau Riche. Titsworth's from D.C. too, so. You know, they're fam, and they do the party at U-Haul, Titsworth's new club. And that's more techno and, I guess, minimal house-based. We have a reggae record coming out that's kind of, I guess, kind of in the Major Lazer lane that is TNT, which has Natalie Storm on vocals. And then we have Rampage and Nader. Rampage is from Chicago, and he's in the Ghetto Division out there with Rob Threezy and those guys. And that's like a more of a disco house vibe. And I played one of the songs like 10 minutes ago called Get Up. That I'm really excited about that. That's like a really, really good, exciting, like fun, full, like middle... 3 a.m. like jam, you know.
Love it.
And then there's one more thing that we have. What is it? There's something coming up that I'm blanking on now. Somebody's gonna kill me, but yeah, we're doing a lot of different kind of music.
And what is the website to go purchase all of these wonderful records?
TandARecords.com.
And it's spelled
out the and. Yeah.
Amazing. So I want to thank you for joining us. We've been trying to get you on here for a while, but it's, you know, family, and we're on the road, you're on the road, but
yeah,
that was just a small snippet of DJing. If I wanted to come and see you DJ in the New York area or in the DC area, where and when?
There's flashinglights.com is our website for Flashing Lights, and that has our dates. Our next party at 88 Palace is the first Friday of July, and we've just confirmed Martin Brothers.
Fantastic.
So we're gonna announce that like this week,
or you just announced it.
Yeah, I may have. Then the Rub 8-year anniversary is the next day. It's July 3rd at Southpaw, and we've got
get in line now.
DJ Scratch from EPMD is playing with us that night in the main room. We hardly ever have guests on the stage with us anymore, but when we do, it's somebody big.
That's amazing. And for DC, you said there's a quarterly Flashing Lights party, right?
Yeah, at Titsworth's Club U-Haul, we're doing sort of roughly quarterly Flashing Lights party down there too. And then I'm also about to be on a Scion tour for the rest of the month, and we're going to 5 different cities in the U.S. with me, Blue Jims, DJ Medi, and Riton.
That's awesome.
They're playing as Carte Blanche. So I've got a lot going on.
That's really great. I'm glad we were able to fit you in. So you got one song lined up for us to take us out. What is it?
I want to play that Rick Ross. It's another one that's not getting played enough on the radio, and super summery vibes.
Okay, great. Well, Ayers, thank you for joining us.
Of course.
Daniel, thank you for joining us. Yeah, now you can say it.
Thank you for having me. That was a great garden mix, by the way.
Thank you to Ingrid as well for coming on earlier. And we are about to go on a three-week hiatus. Punches is going on our first European tour. So we'll be back. We have, don't forget, the barbecue this Wednesday with Kathy Irway from Night Eating Out in New York and our partnership with New York Magazine. And when we get back, we won't be on the air to promote it, but July 11th with...
10th.
10th. Whoops, July 10th. With Sam Mason at Good Company, and keep watching. Dinner with the Band. We have Vega tomorrow night. Really great All Too Vivid snapper dish and some great disco sounds.
Yeah. So we'll be back with food stories from abroad. And then when we get back, we'll have Diane from the Siren Festival talking about the festival, which will be that week.
Yeah.
It'll be great. So thanks for listening. Big shout out to Roberto's, Jack Inslee, Rec Tech, to Brooklyn Bowl for sponsoring us. And we will see you soon.
From my nigga Diddy view, I think I see his vision too. Purple rain over Central Park, chilling with my hoons. Big pops and Sade's, the rocks and Chardonnays. My Cassie sassy, so my penthouse my balloon. We doing it big, it's going down 9/11. I'm doing it big, pulling up in a 9/11. I've been trying to fuck for months, baby girl is now and never. Got the condo on the beach, so through our storms we shall weather. We shining when it's pitch dark. Yeah, this bitch a movie, but this time I play a big part. Fuck the market and look at what I'm accomplishing. I'm beating niggas by margins bigger than Fran talking.
All these cars, all these stars all around me. Put your eye to the sky, that's where you'll find me.
Yeah, baby. I wanna buy my bitch every bag, and she ain't ever, ever, ever gotta take them back. I wanna take my bitch around the globe, Hawaii hang gliding in the mountains, shitting on these hoes. Red bottoms by the barrel, popping Giuseppe tags like it's American apparel. 20,000 up in buying, these haters are never harming. Rick Owens arm and bombers for my whole army. Anile, anile, baby, move fast. She drop it down and bring it back, I like that,
I like that.
I wanna buy my bitch every bag, so she ain't ever, ever, ever gotta take them back.
All these cars, all these stars, all around me. Put your eye to the sky, that's where you'll find me.
If you're looking for me, you can find me in the Guinness Book. Only fly bitches ride with the boss, take a look. I'm super fly, I'm super high. You getting yours, I'm getting mine.
Ooh, women of a caliber, only seen in magazines and calendars. And I'm sitting with Miss October, my birthday's in October. Ooh, strawberry and a rosé, I can see it in her eye. She wink and she toast me. But later on we gonna mosey to a place less populated and get cozy.
If you're looking for me, you can find me in the Guinness Book. Only fly bitches ride with the boss, take a look.
Put your eye to the sky, that's where you'll find me.
What the hell are they yelling?
We are like, we are
what the hell are they yelling?
Looking for me, you can find me in the Guinness Book. Only fly bitches ride with the boss, take a look. I'm super fly, I'm super high. You getting yours, I'm getting mine.